Who's got it better than us?
Nobody! Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you about the Hercules Hero of the Week. Nominate the youth sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contests and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. Did you notice that Caleb Williams' fingernails are making news again?
They are. He's going all pink. All decked out.
All pink.
Well, he has a pink phone case, too.
I'm actually fine with the pink. The reason I didn't like the fingernails before was the messaging.
Absolutely, yeah. Paint your nails whatever color you want. I don't care. But, yeah, when you're trying to send a message with your fingernails to the opposing team and then they stomp you, well, you look like a doofus.
The lip gloss was a lot.
Well, do whatever you want. I couldn't care. I saw what Dennis Rodman did. You know what I mean? Like,
married
Ricky Williams,
Carmen Electra?
Married himself. Showed up in a wedding dress. I don't care. That doesn't impact whether you're good at sports. Wear whatever you want. Wear makeup. I don't care.
But the fingernails were, with the messaging, was a bad strategic move.
Absolutely.
Yes. Speaking of lip gloss, joining us now, he covers the Cougs for... No?
I don't know. One I've of never my seen better, Mitch not, put on lip
I
gloss.
I haven't either. I just thought it was an entertaining way to go. Covers the Cougs for KSLSports.com. The one and only Mitch Harper. What's up, Mitch?
Hey, guys. Happy to be on again.
Appreciate you jumping on. I know you've had a busy week with Utah men's BYU men's basketball, wrapping up their conference tournament. Obviously, extraordinarily disappointing to lose to Duquesne in the first round. How much does that kind of suck the momentum out of the team, or does this still feel like a organization and, I should say, a program on the climb?
It was definitely a bad loss, and it was one that, you know, BYU, no matter what, you know, their circumstance in the NCAA tournament, they struggle in March Madness. They, you know, have the most first-round losses of any program in college basketball. Just BYU comes up short in that department, and so that was a missed opportunity for sure, and because I thought that they should have got at least to the round of 32. They would have probably lost to Illinois, as we saw last night. With the Fighting Illini, that's a really good team going in the Elite Eight, but missed opportunity for BYU. But I've said it this year that next season's team will be better, and I still believe that. It's even if they don't have Jackson Robinson coming back, we'll see what happens with him.
Has Pope shown any interest in other jobs?
Well, that USC job's very interesting with Andy Enfield going to SMU and USC's. And I thought, you know, Louisville would have been one that had. You know, how Louisville ended up with the Charleston head coach, I thought, you know, that's kind of an underwhelming hire for a program like Louisville. You know, USC would be interesting if Mark Pope becomes a legitimate candidate for them. You know, the reports indicate that Eric Musselman for Arkansas is kind of the favorite for USC potentially. But, you know, I think that's one to kind of monitor there for Pope. But, again, I think that, you know, BYU's a – you know, really good job for Mark Pope. And I think that, you know, honestly, BYU should extend him. And, you know, he's got until 2027. I think he should be extended probably into the 2030s because he's the right coach for BYU. The pool is very shallow of candidates that are LDS, you know, coaches in basketball that would be legitimate candidates for the job, especially when you see Mark Madsen gets extended at Cal. Mark Pope's the right guy for the job, and he established BYU with an identity in the Big 12, so I think BYU should extend him once again.
Where do you think BYU goes as they do fill some of these spots? You know, maybe Jackson Robinson's back. It probably depends on how he plays at the NBA Combine and some of his workouts, but how many roster spots do you think they need to fill? What kind of turnover is there, and is there a place they go, a specific direction?
They've got my way-too-early personnel outlook on kslsports.com. They've got two scholarships available right now, one scholarship available right now with Marcus Adams going into the transfer portal. And, you know, they need to get another big, and I think they need to get another ball handler that can create on the guard line or a wing potentially. I mean, they have some needs, and I think that if Mark Pope is his number one priority is retention, but I think that if you can upgrade this roster and there's a legit path to, you know, getting someone in the portal that, you know, can help this team, I think you explore that. They've already contacted about 35 players in the transfer portal already. BYU is very active in that space. And, you know, that's the thing about, you know, this staff, that they've done a really good job since the portal was created of, you know, kicking the tires on anyone. And they exhaust all options. It's not like, you know, they go into a season where they didn't explore every avenue to build up the roster. So they're already, you know, hitting the road hard on that. But I think that, you know, Colin Chandler coming in is going to be an instant difference maker. You already see him popping up on some mock drafts, maybe as a 2025 guy. And you know, because when you're a top 40 recruit, that's kind of the view, is you're going to be an NBA one and done potentially in a best case scenario, but you're going to be an NBA guy eventually. That's what that type of level of talent is. And Chandler, you know, he's going to be coming back from his mission later this spring. And I think expectations will be high, and rightfully so. He was a dominant player in AAU basketball and here in the state of Utah, and I think that he'll provide an instant spark for BYU next year.
What's the biggest thing going on at spring ball right now, Mitch?
They're winding down tomorrow. They'll close it up tomorrow morning. We'll have a practice observation. The big thing, honestly, is continues to be the quarterback spot. I think that, you know, Retzlaff and Bohannon, they're the top two guys, but you know, I'd say Retzlaff's the favorite to win the job. I haven't come away feeling like Bohannon's shown consistently the arm strength that would suggest that he should probably be the number one guy. If BYU wants to have explosive plays for the air, they don't want to be a dink and dunk offense like they were last year. You got to have the arm strength to make that happen. Retzlaff's arm's a little bit better than what I've seen in the past, but still, it's a work in progress with that group. And I think BYU needs to hope that they have an elite ground attack. And with the running backs and the offensive line, I think they should be improved in that area. But it's kind of a wait and see until what we see in the fall with that group, because I think this schedule, even though you don't have Texas and Oklahoma on the schedule, it might be in some regards tougher because your non-conference schedule is far more difficult when you have two road games that could be losses. SMU is going to be a preseason top 25 team next year. They won 11 games last season, and they're adding former Georgia players along their defensive line. They're very active in the transfer portal. That'll be a difficult game when you look beyond just the logo. And then Wyoming, that's going to be their Super Bowl. And we've seen how BYU performs in spots where teams look at BYU as a Super Bowl, i.e. Liberty in 2022. It doesn't tend to bode well. So those are going to be difficult spots for BYU. And, you know, and that's, and then you get into the Big 12 where it's a bunch of, you know, top 15 or 15 to 40 teams in the rankings, and BYU, you know, last year was a team that their only win came against the last place Big 12 team and a third string quarterback that was a freshman who coughed up the ball five times. That was their two wins in Big 12 play. So there's a lot of work to be done. I think though, defensively, BYU, I feel pretty confident there's going to be a very much improved defense. I think they're going to be top four in the Big 12 next season in defense. Honestly, I think Jay Hill has done a lot of good things with this group. And I think the personnel is going to be better. I think the pass rush is going to be improved. You know, BYU is going to have to win some rock fights this year because I think they're going to have to lean on their defense.
Mitch, we haven't talked about her a lot just because of what's happened at Utah women's basketball and BYU men's basketball was so good this year. But Lauren Gustin leaves BYU as one of the greatest players in team history. What does her departure mean for BYU basketball? And what does the future for the women's program hold?
Big loss for BYU, and kind of ended on a sour note for Gustin as she missed free throws in the WBIT, which is kind of the new, you know, second tier postseason tournament. It's an NCAA sanctioned deal. She missed it with 0.4 seconds, but all timer, eighth all time in scoring, number one in rebounds, fourth all time in NCAA history in rebounds. Very accomplished career. I'm curious to see what, if any pro opportunity she has. I mean, being a 6'1 big, you're probably not going to have the WNBA maybe calling, but you know, maybe she could be an international player or something. That there's more money to be had to obviously in international basketball. She can get something there. But Yeah, heck of a player. Amber Whiting, she's going to go into year three next season and back-to-back years of losing records, 16 and 17. They've got, you know, about two scholarships available. They bring in a heralded freshman, Delaney Gibb, who's a guard originally from Canada. She was a top 50 recruit. You know, Amber Whiting's done a really good job in recruiting high school players. They're going to have to, you know, plug some of the holes with the transfer portal, because some of the players that they had last year that they were expecting to contribute, they never materialized, or they left the program already. Nani Falatea left. She's already getting high-level interest in the portal. They had a 6'3" big who transferred to Memphis. I mean, they've had some attrition already that was in season. So there's been a long-term kind of, you know, the understanding what they were facing coming up in April when they put their offseason together. But, you know, I think next year they got to see some big growth. Despite losing Gustin, you got to start winning more games as Amber Whiting puts, you know, plants her feet as you know, stabilizing herself as the head coach heading into year three.
Mitch, thank you. We always look forward to having you on Fridays, buddy. We appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
Thanks, Mitch.
Mitch Harper covers BYU for KSLSports.com. Check it out.
Mitch does a great job. I'm excited to have two teams in the Big 12 next year.
If they bring everybody back, that's a big deal. Not everybody, but because we said you've got to get over that. But, yeah, the men.
Yeah.
They bring most of the team back. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and you add Colin Chandler, who's the best incoming player in the state, is a huge deal.
I think I still think their key to winning is get old and stay old. And I think randomly they have an advantage that nobody else does, that there's no loyalty in college sports anymore. But there's loyalty at BYU because of, you know, different reasons that makes BYU unique. And those reasons have actually worked against them in the past. Randomly, it might really work for them now.
But they also have this ability to randomly get top 50 kids that have no business going to BYU because these kids are of the faith.
Yep.
They want to go play at BYU. So you get
Colin Chandler.
So you get top 50 players that otherwise literally BYU would have no shot at. So, and good for them. I mean, they wouldn't go to BYU if BYU was a terrible program. So you got to be a good enough program and then you can get those kids.
Ah, but what do they do though? Then they stay. It's one thing to get an athlete like that, Ben.
Right.
But as we talked about, they come and succeed at any program. And unless your name's, I don't know, North Carolina, you're not at the top of the pecking order. So if you've got a guy that plays well, there's a significant chance they're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, Walker Kessler, huge recruit, goes to North Carolina. Where did he end his career? Auburn. Like, yeah, even North Carolina has that problem. Like, not everyone can keep them. I don't want to say it's easier to keep guys at BYU because it's not easier to keep everybody, obviously, but some guys it's easier to keep.
But like you mentioned it yourself, maybe some of the reasons some of these guys, earlier in the show you mentioned this, that some of the reasons some of these guys are putting their name into the transfer portal is to see what kind of price tag is out there. And if for no other reason than to twist the arm of the school that they're currently at to pony up the dough to keep them. And it is the smart thing to do. I bet that all happens less at BYU.
Maybe.
It's easier for them to keep their guys once they get them because there's a different connection than just the NIL.
Kind of seems like Lauren Gustin did that last year. Remember, she threw her name in the transfer portal and it was like, oh, Utah's going to come calling, and she went right back to BYU.
I'm not saying they're immune to it.
I'll be curious what happens with guys like Jackson Robinson because he's going to test the NBA waters. And look, he's good. You score 25 points in a NCAA tournament game, and you are showing up on mock drafts. You're going to be one of the top 50 recruits or top 50 transfers if he wants to throw his name out there. He should if he wants to make money. Now, I don't think that's fun for college basketball, but at the very least, yeah, go to the combine and then figure out what you're worth if you come back to BYU at all.
Right.
So, and I just think that's unfortunately the due diligence players have to do. I mean, and you hire an agent and you're doing what's best for you financially, you've got to do it.
I wonder what percentage of recruits that commit to Utah are actually making that decision based on the school as compared to BYU. I bet BYU the number's super high. I bet Utah the number's super low. And no offense to Utah's campus and the school is fine, but I bet there's all these other reasons why they'd commit to Utah. It's their best offer, or they connect with the coach, or they, I don't even know. But it's probably not the school. You know what I mean? You don't
have most playing time, loyalty.
Like
best offer, most playing time. That's what Utah has to offer.
DeLon Wright, the JC transfer, probably didn't get two rips about the campus or the school. He was looking for a place he'd go to the Sweet 16 and then
Go to the NBA.
Possibly go to the NBA.
Yep.
I mean, he probably wasn't like, oh, man, their sociology program is just terrific.
Right.
But BYU, I bet you a ton of them are picking because of the school. Like, I don't even like the coach, but it's BYU, so I'm going.
Yep.
You know, where I want to live that standard or I want that type of education or whatever the case may be. I bet it's way higher for the Cougs than the Utes. And no offense to the Utes, but I think that number is actually...
Oh, I bet it's way higher for BYU than it is 90%
every
of
other school,
in the country.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, the loyalty to the school itself, I bet, is super low unless you're Duke or North Carolina. And even then, they're vulnerable to it. I'm not saying there's no one immune to it, but...
Yeah, Utah needs to find their Rick's College for what Lavelle was able to do throughout his tenure at BYU, which is find the junior college that you just pick kids from and consistently go and mine those schools to bring up players that can play at the next level, and you give them the most opportunity, and you win with them for a year or 2 years, and then you move on to the next kid that's at that school. Now, everyone's trying to do that. That's easier said than done, but that might be what Utah has to do. BYU probably doesn't have to do that as much.
No.
They can do it with UVU, and they have done it with UVU because there are very close connections, obviously.
But I think they need to take advantage of they've got an extra reason for players to be loyal. And then you can pour resources into filling the gaps with transfers if that's the right strategy.
You're talking about BYU.
Talking about BYU.
Yeah.
No, Utah, I still think Utah's key is you find the player that can't get into school for whatever reason, or, I mean, we can make jokes about why they can't get into school, but like, or, you know, in the past haven't qualified or haven't developed fully physically, or, you know, in DeLon Wright's case, you know, the top JC guy, that maybe isn't going to big schools. I think that's their recipe for success. And then they have to beg those players to stay all the time, which would bug me as a coach, but that's how Utah wins. I don't know. Utah is probably not going to get top 50 recruits. I don't think that's in the cards for them. I think those players are going elsewhere.
Yeah, even locally. Even if you randomly have a Colin Chandler who's a top 50 kid locally, are not going to Utah. They have lost that stranglehold on that, which they did have for a while.
And did they in basketball?
They were able to get more of the Britton Johnsons, Alex Jensens, et cetera, that they don't get anymore.
I know, but there was only like three of those guys.
Sure.
The basketball around here has not been strong enough for that to be a factor. I think it's getting better. And I love Britt, Mountain West Player of the Year. He was a big deal for them. But, like, I'm thinking more Keith Van Horn, DeLon Wright, Andre Miller. Even Bogut. They found him overseas before anybody was doing that.
Yeah, but now everyone's doing that.
Right. You know, what's the next thing, though? I mean, yeah. Right.
But, even the Jordan Leverages, I don't think stay in Utah anymore. Maybe.
Maybe he does, and maybe that's the example of somebody that did have a tie to went to Utah for the university. Like Morgan Scally went to Utah for the university. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But in today's day and age, I don't think that loyalty exists very much, except for at BYU, which is where the discussion started, is why I'd take advantage of that. Bring eight players back every year. Fill it in with a couple of gaps that you're missing, and then that's your recipe for success, I think, at BYU. And you're still the only basketball program who's going to take missionaries for the most part. Even now. I mean, that's even more true now because what coach even thinks they're going to be around in 2 years to wait on a missionary?
Yeah, you can't. You can't expect that.
So, all right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies. These guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3, move it.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Get the official debit cards of the Utah Jazz, University of Utah Sports, Real Salt Lake, and more exclusively at America First Credit Union. Been kind of a fun week, Ben, especially considering the Jazz are so not good and not particularly interesting. It feels like we've had a lot of stuff going on this week.
I think it's been a really good NCAA tournament, actually. I think there's been a lot to talk about there.
It was, anyway.
It's been an interesting week. I'm curious to watch the games tonight. Obviously, we'll be at the Jazz game, so I won't be able to catch as much of the basketball, but I'll be watching this weekend and set up the Elite Eight and Final Four. I'm excited. It has been an enjoyable week.
7:30, by the way, a reminder to folks out there for the Jazz game tonight. On this year, they've been, I don't know, I'm sure this is somebody who did the math and said, you know, we can make extra by having the game start a little bit later on the weekends. But they've been doing what, Friday and Saturday night games starting at 7:30?
Yep.
Which is fine, I guess. I don't know. Just started at 7. I like the consistency.
I'm with you. I would go earlier, right? Like, let people spill out and go do whatever they want to after the game ends. But I know that's not necessarily what we're doing.
But that's people spending money outside
the building.
You're
right. Yeah, right. Yeah, so keep them around.
Can I ask you guys something? And maybe people who've been going to Jazz games, multiple Jazz games have noticed this. At one point, there was one of those hot dog stands on the corner of 300 West and
North Temple.
North Temple and
South Temple?
Yeah, South Temple. The 3rd West and South Temple, right? Kitty corner from Park Place.
Yeah.
Whatever. There was one hot dog stand there. And man, don't get me wrong, those things smelled
great.
Incredible. And over like the last, I don't even know how long it's been, like a month? Now there's 15 hot dog things lined up along that area. I mean, like, I can't imagine how they'd actually sell enough hot dogs to make any, but there's like 12 of them. Did they change a law or something? Did I miss something? It was like it went from 1 to like 12 in a couple of weeks. Did they say they can now sell those and all of a sudden that's what's going on?
Well, there's always been food trucks, right? I mean, there's always been little food stands and taco stands and stuff like that.
There hasn't been. I mean, sometimes the Jazz will do something like that.
Not before Jazz games, but there have always been all over the streets of Salt Lake.
Correct. I'm talking about specifically the Jazz. I'm talking about, like, did they – and they don't go inside the – what are those things called? The keep people from driving on there.
Right, the little barriers.
The little barriers. They don't go inside those.
Right.
They're just on the corner. But my point is – that has been legal forever. The taco carts or whatever. I'm aware of that. Yes. Why has somebody just figured out that spot? And why has it gone from 1 to like 30 in such a short amount of time?
I think everyone had the thought that you had, which is, oh, we can't do this on the plaza where the Jazz games are, which is like, well, somebody just looked up the actual line of where you can't do it and figured out, oh, if we're 5 feet outside this line, they can't stop us from hawking hot dogs. And then when one person did it, everyone said, oh, that's a lucrative way to make money. I'm going to go there.
So I'm thinking, though, that there had to be a law changed because people are smart. They figure out where they can sell food like really quick. Like, that would be a good spot. That's why I thought maybe the law changed, because I've been going to every Jazz game for a long time now. And I've seen taco carts everywhere. I got to think that business plan has figured out where they can and can't sell food. And now all of a sudden it's like a.
Well, and also the hot dog stands are different because all you need is a hot top, right? Taco stands, you need like a whole thing. It's a lot bigger. You generally need a full cart. These hot dog stands you're talking about, it's just, you know.
Yeah, they'll wheel those taco stands anywhere.
So somebody figured it out. Good for them. They do. They always smell good walking in because they're doing like the bacon hot dogs and stuff. It smells
Oh, it
really
smells amazing.
Good. I'm going to have to stop and get one before the end of the year.
But the only reason I haven't done it, our boy who has done it, he said they're really good. But like I don't have 10 minutes to stand outside and eat the thing.
Yeah.
Because we obviously can't take it inside.
And the smart thing to do is to go at, like, tonight, when do the doors open? 6 o'clock. It opens up 90 minutes before the game starts. It's like, all the people waiting in line, cater to those people.
Well, there's no way the Jazz left that.
No, I'm sure.
Why I wonder, why has nobody figured this out before? And now that it's just one person and now everybody is like, oh, you can do that?
But it's like, look where all the secondhand ticket sellers stand. They're not at the front door. You know what I mean? They're off on that exact same corner you're talking about. There must be some rule that says you can't be on the property selling them. But the property line is here.
I believe that. But somebody would have figured out the food
Talk
thing a long time
You're
ago.
You're a journalist. Okay. Ask him. Interview him today. I don't want to know.
Like, what happened? Did somebody tell you guys you could come do this? Like, I'm not hating. It smells delicious. But like, it did. Over like a 3-week span,
it
went from
it
1
too.
To like 100.
I noticed it too.
All right.
Well, we should start.
Hot dogs!
We should start hawking hot dogs.
I don't think I could buy one and then like put it in my jacket and get it through security or something. That probably wouldn't be.
No, I probably wouldn't fly.
Because they do smell incredible.
Jazz Rockets tonight. I'm with you. It's hard to generate interest in these games, and that's a little bit my job.
Should the Jazz trade for Jalen Green?
They should have 2 months ago, yeah, at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, in the offseason, should they trade for Jalen Green?
Should they make a move?
You're not answering the question.
Jalen Green?
If Houston waffled on Jalen Green and said, we don't think he's the guy, we want to make a move for him, should the Jazz be the team to pony up the whatever?
I still say no.
Why?
There are weird off-the-floor issues that I'm not sure have resolved themselves. And these small sample sizes and getting stuck overpaying for, who is it, Matt Cassel, based on one game? Who was it who had the big game for?
No, it was Matt Flynn, who signed in Seattle, yeah, having one game, yeah, filling in for Aaron Rodgers,
yes,
I think.
Matt Cassel. But a similar.
Matt Flynn.
Flynn. Yeah. So, no, I would wait a little bit. Look, I know it's dreadful. I think the best thing the Jazz can do is be patient.
I agree.
I know that's dreadful. I just know that's not what anybody wants. And I've been on, you know, thought about, like, yeah, should you do what we talked about with Locke yesterday? Go and trade for a Trae Young type player, and can you skip the step and buy low on Trae Young because he's coming off an injury and they kind of like DeJounte Murray and he's going to be out there on the trade market? Like, are you better doing that? Maybe you are. But also, I just think, like, you know, if you want to say, are the Jazz doing what Oklahoma City did, and Locke laid out all the reasons why they're not doing that, but you know what Oklahoma City did? Extraordinarily patient. And they kind of let the things fall into place. And then they still, what makes them so exciting, if you're an OKC fan or you're watching what they're doing and you're jealous of it, it's because not only do they have all the young pieces, is they still have all these future draft picks and they still have $30 million to spend this offseason because they haven't paid these guys yet.
Yep. And they're in a great spot.
That is because they were patient. And now look at the teams around the NBA who have been impatient and tell me who's doing it right. Tell me which impatient team is in an enviable spot. It's not the Phoenix Suns. They were the most impatient team in the NBA. They might be eliminated in the first round.
Locke is right about a lot of stuff. I don't agree with him on Trae Young. And maybe the Jazz are considering it. Maybe not. I don't know. He probably has more inside info than me. But doing nothing is better than doing the wrong thing, which I think is ultimately what you're trying to say.
Because
here's why I would make a move for Jalen Green. I don't think a ball-dominant guard is the way for... I mean, I don't think Oklahoma City's going to win a title because of Shea, at least now.
Right,
He's great. He's wonderful. I can see the stats. But I don't think Trae Young's going anywhere. Not as the guy. I mean, for the same reason Damian Lillard wasn't going anywhere in Portland. As the 1A, whatever that is, who has the ball in his hand the whole game, it's still a team sport. I'm not buying that kind of player being the best player on a championship team, mainly because it's never happened.
No. And right. So I'm not saying I wouldn't trade for Trae Young in certain situations. Like the Lakers this offseason, I would very seriously consider it.
And they're not going anywhere.
You're trying to win a title. You're not very good this year. You need to add talent. Austin Reeves probably isn't good enough to get you there, but maybe Trae Young helps you with your offensive woes because weirdly, LeBron's teams were already always bad offensive teams, and they're actually always good defensive teams, so maybe you can cover up for Trae Young by having Anthony Davis and a bunch of smart players. So you go and get Trae Young with your three draft picks, and you swap Austin Reeves or whatever.
How did it go with Rusty Westbrook and LeBron?
Yeah, not great.
No.
Now, Trae Young's better than Russ Westbrook.
Yeah, but LeBron's going to take a bite out of whoever. And so if your game is to hold the ball the whole game and rack up stats, well, LeBron's not going to let you do that. So why would that be a good move for the Lakers? Now, I buy into they're desperate, sure. The Jazz are not desperate, and that is the point. Patience is their ultimate leverage.
Yeah, it is.
That they don't have to do anything. LeBron is 55. And the Lakers have to win a title or whatever. They're desperate. So they'll say, oh, sure, give me Rusty Westbrook. Yeah, sign me up for that guy. He averaged a triple-double. And then LeBron's like, well, I'm not going to let Rusty dribble the whole game, so it ain't going to work.
Yeah.
The same thing would be true about Trae Young.
Absolutely would.
The exact same thing. And so I don't think that type of player, if the Jazz are going to spend some assets, is it. Now, if you trade for Trae Young and you're convinced that if you roll out a one-man team and Trae Young averages 39 points a game, that you can flip him for something else, okay, I'll listen to that. But I don't know, is that worth sacrificing your whole culture for? And not to mention Will Hardy's experience as a head coach?
Right. Are you taking it out of Will's hands? And look, I'm not sure how much is actually in Will Hardy's hands anyways, yeah, about what the future of this team looks like.
No, he could – Danny Ainge could trade for Trae Young. He could gut everybody who's played more than 2 years in the NBA off the team. And he could say, hey, Trae, like Locke said, oh, they have a top 10 offense tomorrow if they add Trae Young. Say, okay, hey, Trae, go be a one-man top 10 offense. Go make All-NBA and go make All-Stars, because nobody actually knows what they're talking about when they vote on these things. They just look at stat sheets. And then we'll trade you for a bunch because we'll fake other teams into thinking that you're good. I'd listen to that.
Sure.
But in the meantime, they'd be like, oh, this Trae Young is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah. The nice thing about Trae is if you wanted to keep him, he does fit the timeline. He's 25 years old. Position of need. You need a guard right now. But again, it's.
But if you're Keyonte George, how do you develop with Trae Young on the team?
Yeah, you don't. In fact, you know, there's a real chance that Keyonte would be in that trade.
Do you want Taylor Hendricks to know how to dribble and play basketball, or do you want him to stand in the corner and shoot threes? Because if Trae Young's on the team, he can stand in the corner and shoot threes right now. That would be all he would do. Mm-hmm. That would be his role on the team, and go play some salty defense. That would be it. Or do you want him to try and turn into a well-rounded player? Which I would guess most people want to see him turn into a well-rounded player. Well, he can't dribble and pass right now. So Trae Young's not going to give him the ball. He's a walking turnover.
Right.
Unless he's standing in the corner and shooting a three.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what is going to lead to the ultimate goal, which is a title in Utah. I don't.
I agree with you. And you know what? If I am betting on something that Danny Ainge is going to value and Justin Zanuck is going to value going forward, it's size. Uh-huh. Size at every position. Trae Young does a lot well. He doesn't defend, and he doesn't have any size.
He's very small.
He's very tiny. One of the tiniest good players in the NBA. So I understand the argument. I've thought about the argument. I recognize the idea of making an upgrade, and Trae Young would be an upgrade, talent-wise, but it's cashing in some of your chips where the Jazz probably don't have to cash in their chips. And look, you could do a lot with your three first-round draft picks this year outside of using them to trade for Trae Young and plus some of your young players. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I would just continue to wait. I would just continue to hold on and wait and continue to hold on and wait. And I know that's frustrating for Jazz fans, but that's why you've done all this pain.
It's better than being the Knicks, who make bad decision after bad decision because they think like, oh, we got to make this happen. Their fan base says, what's the plan, Jimmy? And Jimmy says, get me Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, right. You don't want to be
gut
that.
The entire team. You know, trade every good player we've got for Carmelo Anthony, and then we'll go on to do nothing for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Ready, break. You don't want that.
Yeah, the Brooklyn Nets. Brooklyn Nets have continued to repeat this process.
The and then same
they,
disaster.
Then they are
stuff.
Out. They are out of draft picks. And again, the hard part about this, which is what we forget so often, is like this is all designed to take advantage of teams once this new CBA kicks in with the second apron that is so punitive when you are over the tax line. It is so damaging that you have to give away players essentially. And the only thing you can take back is draft picks. And the Jazz are saying, okay, we're going to have all the draft picks in the world. We're going to maintain financial flexibility. And then when we want to just take in your guys that you truly cannot afford anymore, we're there to do it. Because there's only a few landing spots for them because none of the rest of the NBA can take them on either, because then they'll be a second apron team and it's just going to be so hurtful financially to have these teams that can't guarantee they win. And we're not there yet. We just haven't gotten to that point yet where the second apron is that hurtful. And it will get there. And I do think the Jazz continue to position themselves to take advantage of that. And blowing that flexibility before you get there would set the plan back.
I actually think most fans are probably on board with the patience thing. I know the complainers.
It's not the loud ones. But of course, the loud ones are not going to.
Yeah, the complainers get the large amount of attention. Look no further than the uniforms, where I'm convinced that the vast majority of Jazz fans do not care at all what the uniforms look like. But yet I saw somebody pointing it out that they took their picture in purple. If the team picture or something like that in purple. I don't know. I didn't read the thing because I find it all silly. But the point the tweeter was making was, I told you it wasn't yellow.
Somebody like, locally reported that yellow's going away.
It's the complainers that get most of the attention is my point. I would guess, love it or hate it, nobody actually cares that much about the Jazz uniforms. Except for like 10 people who are
very
extremely mad about it for some reason. Like, I'd like this better than that, sure. But do you think somebody's like, I'm not going to another game till they get rid of that yellow? Either that yellow goes or I'm a Suns fan.
Yeah, right.
But there are people out there like that.
Of course.
And then people notice because people go, well, wow, it's that important to you that this, you think this yellow stinks that bad? You're going to be a Suns fan? Well, it must really stink. And then all of a sudden it's off to the races. I actually think most people do not care.
I don't think you're wrong.
All right, good. Good talk, Ben. We'll wrap up the show for a Friday. Coming up next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
I don't want to be left behind. Distance was a friend.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson wrapping up a Friday show. We want to remind you about our friends at Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Were you saying off the air, Ben, that this weekend is the final Jazz home game on a weekend?
This is the final home game. I think they've got a Tuesday and then a Tuesday, Thursday. They play the Cavs and Donovan Mitchell, if Donovan Mitchell plays, coming up next week. And then...
Do you say if he plays? Is there any...
Well, he's been out of the lineup for a while. He's supposed to come back, I think, tonight for Cleveland. But remember, he had the PRP treatment on his knee.
Yeah.
He came back for a game, left and said, look, clearly I'm like not okay, and then also had to get nasal surgery. So he may be wearing a mask. I think there's some chances that... No, they can't really afford to have him take games off, but...
I thought you were implying Donovan would be ducking the...
I mean, Rudy didn't play twice here in Salt Lake, and I know he had a rib injury, but, like, I think teams know they're going to beat the Jazz. And, like, Donovan can use as much rest as possible before the playoffs because they're in a pretty dire situation, I think, in Cleveland, actually more than they recognize. Or maybe they recognize it, but more than they're advertising that they need to start winning games or they got to make some serious changes. So, but I could see him taking this game off.
Cleveland right now is in fourth in the East.
Would match up with the Magic, which is actually probably fine for them.
And they're a game and a half better than the Magic. They're only half game back in the Knicks for third, though.
Right. And the nice thing about that is you avoid the Boston Celtics in the second round. Though, you know, are they going to beat Milwaukee in the second round? No. So, but here's the thing. You may rather play Orlando in the 4-5 matchup and take what you would expect would be a first round series win versus three, and then who would sit at sixth? Who would they play in the first round there?
Oh, wait.
It was sixth in the Eastern Conference.
Got rid of it. Sorry. Indiana.
Neither of those is terrible. You would probably expect to win both of those.
I don't know. I love Halliburton.
So do I. I like the way the Pacers play. And teams that can score are difficult. I know the Rockets the Magic play the best defense in the NBA. I mean, technically it's the Timberwolves, but as far as that being your pure identity, the Magic probably the best defensive team in the league. But those are winnable games. Those are winnable series. But a loss to either Indiana or Orlando would look like a huge disappointment for the Cavaliers. And I would say, you know, the odds of them winning that is not even 60%. I'd say it's like 55.
You believe in the Knicks a lot, though.
If they're healthy. If OG Anunoby's back, and it's been a major question, Mitchell Robinson's back, that's a good sign. Yeah, they're certainly good. I mean, they would crush the Cavaliers in the first round.
I don't know about crush.
They did last year, and they've only gotten better. And I'm not sure the Cavaliers have. Added some shooting, but like five games. I would take the Knicks to beat the Rockets or the Cavaliers in five games.
Coming up next, Hans Olsen and Scotty G.
Those
two. Stay tuned. We will talk to you on Monday.
Thanks, Sarah.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.